it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Podcast.
Hello, my name is Brian Mylander, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Rosanna Tennant, and you are listening to the incredible Cut to the Race podcast.
Hi, I'm Jordan King, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Brophy. You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out, and away we go!
Hello and welcome to the Cut to the Race podcast. We're here today to discuss the Sprint Saturday for the Austrian Grand Prix. Now, we've done this before where we broke off the episode into two so that we could cover all the weekend's action. So today we're just covering the sprint action. So that is the sprint shootout and also the sprint for F1.
Before we start, I just want to say a few words about the tragic passing of Delano Vantoff, who lost his life in a crash on the last lap of a Formula Regional race at Spa-Francorchamps earlier today. The young Dutch driver was just 18 years of age. Motorsport is inherently dangerous, and today is a painful reminder of that. However, when it comes to the safety of those competing in motorsport, we can do better and we must do better. Regardless of how unattainable it might be, the pursuit of absolute safety must never stop. I speak for everyone at Formula Nerds when I say that our heartfelt thoughts and condolences go out to Delano's family and friends, all of those in the MP Motorsport team and the Formula Regional paddock on what is a truly sad day.
Yeah, thank you for those words, Sam. And I think you echo the thoughts and feelings across the motorsport world today. We lost someone who was far too young to be lost, and the circumstances in which we did were, some say, avoidable. Abby, do you have anything that you want to say?
It is heartbreaking, and it is not something that we need to hear. That is the second young driver who we've lost in the motorsport world in the past 4 or 5 years at the same circuit as well. I think safety always needs to be at the forefront of everyone's mind in motorsport. As you said, Sam, it is a very dangerous sport. And if weather conditions aren't safe, if there is anything unsafe, then it shouldn't go ahead. And like you said, our thoughts are with everyone who knew Delano. And it is very sad to hear that today.
And it certainly put a tone on the day. And we've seen how much it has shaken people up. It's shaken us up. And, you know, there is a lot of talk about why we're certain people in that situation at the time, you know, and it could have been avoided. Sam, I know you spoke about, before we started recording, Stroll's reaction and how sort of shaken up he seemed by that. Obviously it's a dark day for motorsport, but what do you think is going to happen in the coming weeks? Because it's not far away from racing at Spa again.
Well, exactly. You know, the last weekend of July is the Belgian Grand Prix, which will see a full slate, including F2 and F3. There, as Stroll said, I think that the Eau Rouge Radeon Kemmel Strait kind of section of the track needs to be looked at, quite frankly. I also think we need to look at the processes and procedures in place that lead to kind of one lap shootouts at the end of races, particularly in adverse weather conditions. So I hope that they can find some safety measures in the next few weeks that work as a temporary measure. I think that wouldn't be a long-term solution, but something like a kind of 1994 style chicane would work. But yeah, I don't want to get too much into solutionizing, I guess. I think it's a difficult day for a lot of people. And I think that, yeah, I think Delano will be in everyone's thoughts in a few weeks' time when everyone gets to Belgium.
So let's talk about what happened this morning. It was a sprint shootout. So we're not going to talk about the actual qualifying, which was yesterday. I still find this all very strange, but we're going to talk about the sprint shootout. So, Abby, do you want to run us through what happened? It was a day of mixed conditions as well. And by the way, I've got to say that the F3 today was absolutely incredible, but we're not here to talk about that.
Yes. So for the sprint shootout qualifying, normally it is three sessions, SQ1, SQ2, SQ3, with decrease in time, 12 minutes for SQ1, 10 for SQ2, and 8 for SQ3, which was the same today, but normally it's medium tyres mandatory for the first two and softs for the final one. However, the session was declared to be a wet track because of the weather, obviously, which meant that drivers could run whatever set of tyres they would like. So it disregarded the medium compound tyre rule. And you had drivers on softs. You had Kevin Magnussen, Verstappen and Bottas on mediums as well. Now, it began with Sainz having a brake-by-wire failure, came into the pits, Ferrari worked on the car, but that didn't hinder his session at all because at one point he did set the fastest lap. There was a yellow flag because Zhou spun, but he managed to get going again. Piastri was unfortunately impeded by Leclerc, which did result in a penalty for Leclerc after the session. I think the most notable thing was between Hamilton and Verstappen, and it caused Hamilton to be moved down the order, which meant that Hamilton was out of SQ1. So it was Zhou, Piastri, Hamilton, Bottas and Sargeant.
Yeah, so the thing with Hamilton I found really quite interesting. You know, he was clearly pissed off. There was no dodging that. He didn't want to talk to anyone about it. You know, he said it was all mistimed. But the incident with Verstappen, it looked like Hamilton had messed up Verstappen, and then, you know, Verstappen at the end of his flying lap went, "All right, mate, two can play that game," and purposely slowed him down. The FIA didn't even look at this. Stewards didn't even look at this, but I think it did, to be fair, need looking at. I'm not sure who was wrong, but they were clearly winding each other up.
Well, it doesn't really matter who was originally at fault. There is a process in place. The stewards review impeding and award a penalty if it's deemed to be justified. Verstappen can't decide to be the arm of the law. That's not how this works. He doesn't enact the justice himself, which I think was immature from him. Also, not the first time we've seen Verstappen do this with Hamilton. I think what makes me uncomfortable is it feels like it's a personal thing at times, and that's not appropriate. I'm shocked that it wasn't looked at. And it clearly had an effect on Hamilton's session. But again, it was only the SQ session, so it's not like it was the full Grand Prix qualifying.
And without going into too much into it, you just mentioned the personal thing, which sort of sprung something in my mind, which was where Hamilton made a bit of a ridiculous comment earlier on in the weekend, didn't he? Where he said the FIA should they should set a time limit on when other teams can start developing their car. And he quoted different eras of F1 and forgot to mention himself within those eras. And Verstappen obviously came back and basically exposed him on the, quite a silly thing to say. Do you think that had anything to do with it? It was just bringing that up, bit of personal rivalry.
I mean, it shouldn't have. It was an ill thought out through suggestion. The fact that he, you know, failed to mention himself in that didn't look great, and was a bit of a faux pas on his part. But ultimately, speaking on the kind of, you know, justice and policing side of things, as we touched on just before, you can't police what people think. That, like, I don't know if you've seen the film Minority Report with Thought Police. Yeah. We can get philosophical.
Classic,
here. We can get very kind of
a brilliant film.
It is. We can get very Orwellian and very kind of 1984 about this. But you can't, Christian Horner was absolutely spot on when he said you can't start policing what's in people's heads, you're going to start thinking about what concepts might work, what direction you want to take your car in for next season. There's no way for F1 to put a parameter on that, which is why Hamilton's suggestion doesn't work ultimately. But yeah, the fact he failed nor neglected to mention his own period of dominance and skipped straight back to the previous Red Bull era of dominance, yeah, looks a bit silly. It wasn't his finest moment.
No, it wasn't. And I don't think any of the coverage of it really helped him. But moving into SQ2, Abby, so it was the Hamilton out in the first one, and it just got worse for Mercedes, didn't it?
It certainly did. So after SQ1, Russell came into the pits with a hydraulic failure, which meant that he did no running in the session of SQ2. The team were constantly working on the car, and he qualified for the sprint in 15th. However, Verstappen, being Verstappen in 2023, he continued to dominate the session. There was a time where Kevin Magnussen went second fastest and Ocon did go fastest in the final 2 minutes, but Verstappen obviously beat them. De Vries, who did get through to SQ2, he had a lap time deleted. Obviously, track limits is something that has been a common occurrence this weekend, but it was Albon, Gasly, Tsunoda, De Vries and Russell who were out of SQ2.
And that, therefore, meaning both Hasses got through, which was, yeah, very good to see. Very good to see. But I think we all know, obviously, Verstappen got the pole in the end. But some interesting results in SQ3, weren't there, Abby, getting ready for the sprint race?
It was. It mixed up the order for the sprint race, which was quite exciting because it was a Red Bull front lookout, but you had Norris, who had McLaren's upgrades, qualify in P3, Hülkenberg in fourth, then Sainz and Leclerc, Alonso, Stroll, Ocon and Magnussen. However, Leclerc's three-place grid penalty for impeding Piastri bumped him down to P9 for the sprint.
And yeah, I mean, that was a slam dunk penalty, and shout out to Oscar Piastri for conducting himself the way he should have in that moment and just say, got cut off by the Ferrari there, got impeded. And then that was that. Let things take its natural course and look like I got a penalty. Not to, you know, kind of dwell too much on the earlier incident in qualifying.
So let's talk about the sprint race, okay? And I want to just take a pause to do our sprint ratings. Let's make this a thing now. We rate everything else. So rating this sprint, Abby, what would you give it out of 10?
I would give it a 8 out of 10, actually, because I found it a lot more enjoyable than the Baku sprint race. It's certainly one that I will remember, obviously, from the previous sprints with the old format. Brazil was the only one I remember, and I'm pretty sure if I say the Brazil sprint race, everyone knows which one I'm talking about. But this one was actually quite good. You had a lot of battles at the front and in the middle of the pack. Two Red Bulls fighting against each other, the Astons at the end, Ocon, Albon, loads of cars were coming into play. And I feel like Austria is a great track to bring all the cars together and bring the midfield into a position with each other. So I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
Okay, nice. Nice high rating from Abby. Sam, what are you going to give it?
I agree that it was a very good sprint race, or very good for a sprint race. But I feel like it was somewhat circumstantial. Without the weather, do you get as good a race? I don't think so. But again, I do concede that you could probably extend that logic to Grand Prix and racing in general, with some of these factors that come in, you kind of go, well, without it, it wouldn't have been very interesting. And yeah, fair enough. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. It was good for a sprint weekend, and I'm not sold on the new format. It's bothering me a little bit. I don't like it kind of right in the middle of the weekend. I think if you can find a way to have it earlier in the weekend, or I don't know, mix up the format a little bit, there's changes that need to happen, something like that to make it a little bit different. There's lots of different ideas out there about, yeah, kind of reserve drivers racing in it or changing the qualifying slightly. Those should be looked at. But yeah, it was entertaining, I can't lie. And F2 and F3 also did some heavy lifting today. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a 9. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The only reason it's not a 10 is because we knew who's gonna win it. one way or another, he managed. But I thought the rain brought in, you know, the conditions and the conditions changing in the tyres. It just brought racing all the way through. I think we've seen a lot of sprints where it's been very exciting at the start and then it just sort of dwindles all the way down. But there was fighting till the very last lap. So I thought it was absolutely brilliant and what sprint races in F1 should be. Let's get into some of the events that happened. So I think the one that most people are talking about, and maybe people will try to make a mountain out of a molehill here, but it's the start. It's where Max Verstappen had a potentially slower start, and Perez, he showed that he's not going to be bullied anymore. That's sort of the way I perceived it. Abby, did you think this Perez saw his moment and thought, right, I've got to show why I'm still here?
I think he had the better start. He knew that. He's not going to play nice and just sit on the sidelines and let Verstappen gallop off into the distance anymore. I think he knows that his seat at Red Bull is in jeopardy, especially with what Helmut Marko has now said about De Vries and the pressure that are on drivers in the Red Bull seats. And yes, he hasn't had a good run of it since Miami. And I feel like he's trying to prove himself, and yes, they're teammates, but for me, seeing both Red Bulls battle at the start was definitely one of the highlights of the race, because it was a proper battle between the two of them. Obviously, they had some choice words about what the other one did and how it impacted their race, but it was really good to see, actually, some proper racing, I feel like, but also slightly maybe a bit more aggressive than it needed to be.
I think, quite frankly, for Perez at this point, the form's not there, the pace isn't there. And Ollie, you mentioned that he kind of showed that he wasn't going to be bullied. Yeah, he did. And then subsequently got bullied into the next corner.
for 10 seconds,
so,
right?
Yeah, so yeah. It's like, kind of. And I think, realistically, Max did go in too hot into turn three. It was a mistake. He pushed out wide, but, he could have braked it sooner. So ultimately, that's for Max. But it was, I guess, in some ways, retribution for what Perez obviously did on the straight, which is put Verstappen half onto the grass. I was actually speaking to James McKenzie before we started recording, and he said that I think this is just kind of proof that the Max of 2021, the Max of old, is still there, and this is what we will get if he is in a close fight moving forward. Ultimately, a leopard doesn't change its spots, and he doesn't buy that it was an accident going into turn three. He kind of feels it was more intentional, which, yeah, fair enough. But if we're gonna kind of zoom out slightly on the race as a whole, 21 seconds in 24 laps,
tut tut tut, sorry, had to do it.
And yes, Perez was in battles. Yes, he spent half the race behind Nico Hülkenberg, but come on, it's as Abby said, he's under a lot of pressure, and Red Bull have this brilliant way of kind of, you either step up or you break under that pressure, and I think Perez is getting closer and closer to breaking. It's no longer a incentivizer for him. It's no longer a kind of kick up the arse. It is starting to weigh on him heavily, it looks like.
Yeah, and I to be fair, I thought, as sort of out of turn one, I thought this is the moment. This will be the Daniel Ricciardo at Baku. This will be the Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg in Spain. I just could see it happening. And I believe Perez knew that Max was there. Of course he did. He was saying, no, mate, you're not. You don't own this, right? We're racing, right? And we're teammates as well. And when I looked back on the replay of Max going into turn three, okay, he was a little bit out of control, but there wasn't much of an attempt to turn the steering wheel, regardless of anything. Yes, you could see that he was going in that trajectory anyway, but there wasn't much he was doing about that. And obviously that put Lando Norris in the crosshairs, didn't it? Which was bittersweet.
Oh, I think it was just bitter, really.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the sweet came from. It just fell out.
He was complete collateral damage in that incident. So much so that he basically came to a stop on the apex. And then, I don't know if an anti-stall kicked in or he kind of lost it. He just got swarmed by the rest of the field and was outside of the points by that point. And you've got to feel for the guy, because he was just trying to mind his own business and potentially capitalise on the Red Bulls ahead of him. A man who did capitalise, though, Nico Hülkenberg. He had a great first lap. And as the Red Bulls continue to fight into turn four, or is it five? Because I think they actually count that kink on the top straight as four and then five. Either way, Rebel Ring has some curves that are counted as corners. You know where I mean, into the kind of Hamilton-Albon corner.
Yeah.
Albon corner. Yeah. And Verstappen kind of forced Perez wide. Hülkenberg capitalised on that. And to his credit, pulled out a gap to Perez, stayed there for 12 laps, which is half the sprint race. A sterling job for him. And, you know, particularly difficult on that Haas, which is, although quick on over one lap, is very hard on the tyres.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was just hope for me, but I hadn't appreciated maybe Hülkenberg was going absolutely at the limit for those 12 laps to try and keep up with Max. But all of a sudden, it just fell off a cliff, didn't it? Because I genuinely thought, what is Perez doing? He can't even catch a Haas. But Perez was just sitting there waiting, surely, Abby, wasn't he? He wasn't me. He wasn't hoping for Haas.
Well, he might have been. I mean, seeing a Haas in the top three isn't something that you see at every race. It was certainly entertaining to watch. But yeah, Hülkenberg was pushing it to the limit, and ultimately his tyres then dropped off and he couldn't sustain it. But it did mean that whilst he did fall back down the order, there were quite a few battles throughout, and it wasn't just the top teams with Aston Martin and Ferrari. It was Alpine and McLaren and Haas. And having Norris fall back down again, like you said, it was very bitter because I think he could have been in for a podium this weekend in the sprint if he hadn't have been caught in the Red Bull into battle. But yeah, unfortunate for both of them, but it was good to see them have some good racing throughout.
It also begs the question, and it felt like an inevitability that Nico would slip further down the order at some point. But it did beg the question, would this count as a podium? Or rather, would it be a podium, but it wouldn't count as breaking his podiumless streak? I got into a bit of a tussle with our admin on Twitter about this, as much as Twitter was working today. But yeah, I personally felt that it wouldn't have counted. And almost, I think it would kind of sully the accomplishment and the achievement, even when he does eventually get a podium, which, albeit unlikely, you wouldn't want to ruin the sanctity of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting hypothetical conversation. I think what we could talk about is the pit stops, because the track was drying out. There was talk of, right, okay, do we try and stay out on the inters? Obviously, the front runners, that was the option to do. But for the guys at the back, right, do we get them on soon? And it was George Russell who whacked them on lap 16. This was quite exciting, Abby. What did you think of the strategies? Do we, don't we? And is it too soon? Is it not? I've got to be honest, I didn't think Russell was going to survive that when he first put them on.
No, I didn't. And at first I thought, Russell, why are you risking it? But he didn't have anything to lose, really. Mercedes were out of the points from the beginning. You have to be in the top eight for the sprint. So then after Russell came in, Hamilton then came in, and he actually did the overcut on Russell. But because Russell pitted earlier, his tyres were then warmer and he managed to overtake. And it did look a bit iffy, not a technical adjective there, but it did look a bit hairy at the beginning when Russell went on to slicks. But then they did come into their own, and the slicks were proving to be the better tyre because Russell was then setting some fast sectors.
I mean, not to pick holes, but is hairy a technical adjective?
I was thinking that. No. Iffy, that's not technical. Hairy.
But I mean, Hülkenberg was the big risk, right? There coming in. He was in the points. And it looked like, yeah, as I said, a big risk, but I actually think he would have ended up further down the order had he not come in, because the top of the field didn't come in, stayed on inters, fought on inters until the end of the race for the final eight laps or so. Hülkenberg was able to work his way back through and got up to, got past Ocon again, just behind the Aston Martins. In fact, another lap and he would have taken both the Aston Martins. So probably he would have ended up behind Ocon had he not come in. So it looks like a bit of a genius move by Haas in the end of the day.
And it allowed Hülkenberg to get the fastest lap of the race as well.
Should we talk about the Aston Martins towards the end of the race? So, Sam, before we started recording, you said it looked like Alonso was just following Stroll around for most of the race. What were your takeaways from Aston Martin today? Because it looked like the pace was good.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, it looked like he wasn't just following him. It looked like he was kind of lifting. And he was kind of, like, you know, when you're walking along the street and there's a slow person in front of you and you have to kind of, like, adapt and kind of, you know, try and get past them, but you obviously you're not quick enough to just like go straight past them, and, mm-hmm. and then they move and it's all a bit like, oh, and then yeah, it kind of gets all a bit messy. It looks a little bit like that. It looked like Alonso was having to take slightly different lines and was kind of ending up in parts of the track he didn't want to because Stroll was there slower in his way. And yeah, he didn't want to kind of step on the back of his foot.
It felt like he really knew his place within the team. This is the owner's son. I'm not gonna go too aggressive with him. Just if an opportunity arises, I will just casually go around. Exactly like you said, really.
Exactly. Why waste a P4 and P5, albeit in the sprint race? Why waste that when you could just? It's a point difference. Alonso is a wily old fox. He knows that it's really, in the grand scheme of things, not worth it. So, yeah, but then he kind of had a change of heart partway through and looked very, very racy towards the end of the sprint. And Stroll, to his credit, managed to hold him off. So some entertaining inter-team fighting there. And, yeah, hopefully we'll see more of that because they will line up tomorrow alongside each other.
Okay, so that was our thoughts on the sprint Saturday for Austria. As we started the show with, it has been a difficult day for the motorsport community, but I hope that it is something that we can learn and move forward from as a collective and a community. We will be back to review the rest of the weekend, which will involve Friday's practice and qualifying, and then the Sunday. It's all very strange having to do this. But until then, thank you very much for joining us, Abby.
Thank you for having me.
And Sam, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you as well.
Goodbye. Sports Social Podcast Network.